Hello and welcome to this week's Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from world headquarters here at Revenue Rocket. Revenue Rocket is the premier M&A advisor and growth strategy consultancy to IT services companies worldwide. We are here today. I'm happy to be here today with my partners, Ryan Barnett and Matt Lockhart. Welcome, guys.
Great to be here, Mike. I know that we've got a fun topic today, and so always good to talk about what's going on.
Awesome. Ryan, what are we talking about today?
Yeah, hey, guys. Today we're talking about something that's near and dear to our heart, and it's really what to expect in the timelines when considering selling your company. And I want to walk through kind of four big categories, kind of readiness, pipeline development, LOIs, and due diligence and close. So with that, just would love to just start it out on kind of the big question, and I'll open us up to, I think, Matt, you've probably got a good perspective on this. If you combine all of those things, all of those timeline activities, you know, what's an appropriate timeline for a seller to expect going to market?
Thanks, Ryan. And important to note, you know, sort of the differences between a buy-side process and a sell-side process. And your question was, you know, sort of directly related to if you're selling your company, what should you expect? Obviously, if we had a crystal ball, we probably wouldn't necessarily be here on the podcast. So it's hard to predict exactly, but we like to talk about a 6-month time frame to selling your business. Now, there's an assumption in that there is, you know, readiness has occurred, prior to officially starting the process. And, you know, when we talk about readiness, obviously there's the financial readiness, there's the marketing capability, you know, there's thought put forward in terms of the ideal prospect, the ideal buyer prospect for a particular selling firm. So with the assumption that there is at least a baseline of that readiness in place, then the ability to create the marketing materials, to create the plan and schedule can be done very efficiently, you know, really in the first 30 days of the process. And then, you know, you start the marketing process and identifying and getting in touch with those ideal prospects, which is obviously something that, you know, we've got a great deal of experience with at Revenue Rocket. And we like to see that marketing and generating interest and getting to that letter of intent can be done in, really a 8 to 10 week time frame. So if you think about that first month is readiness, that next, you know, where you're marketing and identifying the right buyer and creating that interest and getting to that letter of intent is an 8 to 10 week process. And then we like to set, you know, standard expectations of a 60 to 90 day due diligence process, right? And so keeping that in terms of keeping that expectation front and center for both the buyers and the sellers is, I think, very important, because one of the things that we talk about and really advise both sides is to keep that momentum up, that the old axiom that time kills all deals, you know, really does apply in the M&A process. So, you know, let's keep that standard 6-month baseline in place. And, you know, quite honestly, we've been very successful at doing that in a number of our most recent sell side transactions.
Yeah, and I'd love to kind of break some of this apart as well. And I think we have some really good examples, recent examples for us, on where readiness has had kind of presented itself in two ways. One example is a company that had already done a quality of earnings report before they ever talked to us. The other one was just starting to consolidate financials and starting to look at their businesses as a whole. They knew that they wanted to go somewhere bigger, but still trying to examine it in a bigger construct. Mike, where do sellers need to be when they start to reach out to start this process? And what advice can you give them of the general readiness to sell the company?
Yeah, that's a great question, Ryan. I mean, I think what's important to know is that, one, you got to have your financial house in order, right? Critically important if you're going to entertain a sell side process. Your books have to be accurate. You have to be able to forecast the business in a meaningful way. And you need to be able to have enough financial chops in the business so that there's confidence in those numbers when a buyer reviews them. Now, depending on the buyer, they're going to do various levels of diligence, but you should assume that they're going to do a deep dive on your numbers to validate your cash flows, make sure the numbers are correct, and, you know, understand that the business is healthy and growing. If the business is shrinking, it's very challenging to convince a buyer to buy your business at anything other than a material discount. So I think it is important to note that your business is in the best position to sell when, you know, you're growing both revenue and profitability. You're at in the top quartile from a profitability perspective. And certainly those numbers are available from a variety of sources. So I would recommend you look into what is that in your type of IT services business. And then be able to make sure everything is accurate. I think beyond the numbers, you need to be also mentally sort of ready, right? And what I mean by that is that you're ready to do whatever it is you say you're ready to do, whether that is to sell in, meaning you want to be part of something bigger with more resources and you want to work for that combined or new organization post-transaction, or sell out, which would be you want to look for some sort of transition out of the business within anywhere from 6 months to 2 years post-transaction. And that you're sort of, you know that. I think it's oftentimes difficult to enter into a transaction and have a seller say to us, well, we'll do whatever, right? You know, we'll stay, we'll go. It depends on the deal, depends on the buyer, you know. Certainly, we have a lot of situations where that occurs and people come to the consensus on what they want. But I think it's always better to come to a transaction process having clarity about what it is you personally want to do post-transaction.
Yeah, I think that we see this oftentimes, and sellers will go through a change in their mindset throughout the process. And so when you're ready, I think you're absolutely ready. You're right. The mentality to sell has to be there, and what you want to do next, whether that's relaxing on the beach, spending more time with your grandkids, or being all in with the acquiring company, it helps that readiness to be there. Even though the process may ultimately be different than what you set your mind out to, I think it's important that you at least have a stake in the ground.
And you have the right to, let me just add that, you have the right to change your mind. Many people do that. Like someone might say, hey, we're looking to retire. We want to exit within 6 months. And then, you know, as diligence, you know, you get to know a buyer, you get to understand their mandate, and you understand what the needs are, you may say, wow, this is really interesting, and I'm energized by that, and I want to be part of it, and I want to sell in, right? Now, the bigger thing to note is that those decisions impact your financials. So if you're choosing to stay, that's great, but you have to be able to model what, you know, that comp is going to be, and that impacts your financials. Likewise, if you're going to go, you know, you need to have already probably put in a place, a management transition plan, so that you can model the savings of your comp out of the financials. So they do have some financial ramifications based on what you want to do. And certainly it's within your right to change your mind later, whether you're going to stay or go. But it will impact the financial modeling on the deal. You just need to be aware of that.
Correct. Got it. So for us, ideally, 30 days of readiness time. Again, we have to put together marketing material. We need to create an initial list. We need to create kind of a valuation. We have to all be on the same page of the messaging and targeting. So target about 30 days and to get out there. And I'll transition this to kind of pipeline building. And if you think about major parts of the pipeline building, an advisor is typically going to look at companies that you're going to go target, as well as trying to bring some inbound leads kind of from the marketing, kind of the general populace. Pipeline can, from the list build and outreach, can be a very variable process based on the market dynamics and the state of the company, the state of the market, the state of the category in which the seller is in. If you're trying to find a very, very niche product, it can take a longer time. If you're trying to sell something, for example, if you're a pretty cut and clear managed service provider today, your pipeline build is going to be much shorter than others. It's all size and technology type all have a major portion. Matt, I'd love to get your thoughts on what you think sellers should think about on the pipeline front when it comes to entertaining kind of mini companies in the pipeline and the options that they may have and what to expect for timing when it comes to bringing suitors to the table.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. You know, it starts going, you know, it's important to go back to that idea of readiness. And Mike brought it up in the context of what is the type of arrangement that a seller would be looking for. Are they selling in? Are they selling out? Are they looking to, you know, retire? Are they looking to, you know, grow with the business? All of those things, right? And that's going to lead to that ideal prospect profile. Now, important to note that what is ideal and exact, sort of that center of the bullseye, it's really hard to achieve, you know, so it's important to have a level of flexibility when thinking about generating that overall target list, if you will. And obviously, because of our experience in, you know, in this marketplace over 20 years, there's a lot of connections that we have. So we jumpstart the process in identifying candidates that would be you know, likely merger and acquisition, you know, opportunities. But even with all of the experience that we have, it's important for us to canvas, you know, the market and understand, you know, what firms we may not be aware of in generating that list. And so, you know, starts with that ideal prospect. Starts with us, you know, canvassing our network and then building the list from there. And, you know, Ryan, your team is front and center in this. And I know that our research team is one of the best in generating that list. So, you know what, you know, Ryan, what do you say? We sort of try to get a list of 50 to maybe 75 potential targets in place.
Yeah, you know, typically it takes about 100 companies to look at to get a deal done. What we found is actually the smaller, more targeted the research list is, and the more time we spend in finding the right candidates, the better the conversations go. What's interesting is in a sell-side deal, if you're looking at selling your company, it's hard to understand what a buyer's motivation may be. If they're looking to with a strategy to expand, let's say, a technology base, let's say they're in Oracle ERP strategy today, but they wanted to get into Oracle Marketing Cloud, we don't necessarily know that. So it's hard for us to understand where that might come from, but we're still going to target around the peripheries and try to bring the best target market to light. And it's an interesting process where ultimately where buyers come from, and that's why it's important to get to use someone that can have some breadth in depth in the not only the research perspective, but the ability to find kind of multiple suitors out of almost nowhere. And we've here at Revenue Rocket, we've used a number of ways to increase the size of the base and the size of the targets. For us, it's probably the most interesting part is when you get multiple parties together all at the same time. And which kind of leads us to the next topic is if we can get enough people interested in a deal, hopefully most of them are providing LOIs. And like Mike, if you could talk a little bit about the, what's the timeline associated? It once an interested party's there, they've signed NDAs, they've gone through introduction meetings, they viewed a financial packet or a confidential information memorandum. This process from reach out to that part can take as fast as the buyer wants to go. Once they're there and they're ready to put an LOI, kind of what happens in that time frame? It seems like things can get really crunched and we're trying to punch a lot of things through things very quickly.
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Ryan, because every buyer is different, right? Everyone moves at a different pace. Sometimes they want to try to do a ton of diligence ahead of the LOI, some of which is inappropriate to be done. It's really more substantive due diligence. We use the term, sort of preliminary due diligence, which is what should be done before an LOI. You have to remember that an LOI is a non-binding letter of intent other than typically the no shop clause. So it codifies what we would consider a handshake or what the transaction is likely to be. And it shapes, it really shapes the negotiation, and it provides a vehicle to communicate with the lawyers as to what the deal should be as well. And it does take you off the market. More often than not, there is a, what we call a no shop provision that takes you off the market. And because both parties, both you as a seller and a buyer, are going to, incur some material expenses in doing that due diligence and ultimately getting through the negotiation on the definitive agreement. But oftentimes I think buyers, make some mistakes here in that they try to get too much diligence done before the letter of intent and they get bogged down. So it's contingent upon an advisor to manage those buyers' expectations about what's required and what's not in order to formulate and submit a letter of intent. It's also contingent upon that advisor to negotiate the terms of that letter of intent prior to it being issued. And so there's a lot of back and forth that goes on in our case if we're an advisor representing a seller with a potential buyer in managing their expectations, making sure they have enough information but not too much in order to submit that letter of intent, and then talking about structuring that would be acceptable to our client and is hopefully above market for you selling your business. But the timing, to get back to the timing, it can be very quick. It can take from the time they have all the information till the time they issue a letter of intent, a matter of days, or it can be a month. It really just depends on how quickly they move and what the approval cycles are on their side, vis-a-vis, ultimately getting a letter of intent issued.
I think of one thing I want to address here is in the LOI stage, and when someone puts forth an offer, it does help move everything along, I'd say exponentially faster. And when you get that LO on the table, the process becomes much more real. And kind of the abstract and valuation that you talked about turn from valuation expectations to something much bigger, which is a willing buyer and a willing seller. And the further conversations with the next people become much more real and much more time sensitive. And it's a very, very critical stage for follow-ups, for getting more people to the table, to kind of not bring bad buyers to the table at that point, getting the best deal for the seller who's looking for the strategic fit, the cultural fit, and the financial fit.
Yeah, and I'd add one more point to this, which is speed is critical at this phase as well as in the due diligence phase. So, we'll typically work with a client and preparing them while we're bringing them to market and vetting buyers to prepare their diligence materials. We kind of know certainly what buyers are going to look for. And so we ask folks to pre-populate a portal to prepare that information, because the speed at which you can respond to information requests, both pre-LOI and post-LOI pursuant to due diligence is directly correlated to how fast not only this process can move, but more importantly, the confidence that the buyer has that you have your act together. And typically, if you can respond quickly, they assume, they make an assumption, right or wrong, that that information is accurate. And ultimately, in our experience, find that they don't necessarily do as deep a dive as they might if it took a long time for you to produce the information as requested. So, you know, these timelines are pretty critical to pay attention and make sure that you have your financial house in order. Our experience has been that back to our original recommendation, if your financial house is in order, then these recommendations should be easy to provide. If it takes, you know, weeks and weeks to provide them, oftentimes that in its own right will put potential transactions in jeopardy.
All right. Considering we, if we have an LOI signed, everyone's with the assumption that there's a no-shop clause in place, we move into due diligence. And we've got plenty of podcasts and topics around due diligence as well and what to expect. Matt, I'd love to, if you could wrap us up here and walk through what's a kind of realistic expectations for due diligence and some key considerations for a seller.
Sure. Again, back to the point of it's important to keep the momentum rolling. And so preparation is key, and advanced preparation before even the letter of intent is executed to prepare both sides for what's to come in due diligence. And to move through that process as expeditiously as possible. Well, it's a big word, expeditiously. That's tough. So having a plan is the first place. You know, it's sort of that old axiom of well prepared. the better prepared, the easier it is to win. And so, you know, the first part of the process is going to be the information request, right? You need to give the selling party enough time to gather their information. So, you know, realistically, you can see things being populated into a deal room, a secure deal room at that, in 1 week's time. Now, that's not going to be all of the information. There will be following information, but, you know, the appropriate financials, the appropriate organizational structures, the appropriate contract information to, you know, really begin the sort of the financial testing aspect of the due diligence. And, you know, so that assessment and analysis of that information should take, you know, maybe a month to 5 weeks. But while that is happening, you're also finalizing any terms within the deal structure and getting prepared for the development of the definitive agreement, right? So, again, we like to set the expectation of a 60 to 90 day process, you know, for due diligence. You need to be receptive and responsible in the providing of information as well as the analysis of that information in that 5 to 6 week time frame to enable the appropriate time to negotiate the definitive agreement, finalize any terms, and then prepare the closing materials, the schedules related to the closing materials. And Mike, I know that you give a lot of guidance, and sometimes people don't understand the challenges in creating schedules. So maybe touch on that, and then you can wrap us up.
Yeah, I think it's important to note a lot of people overlook the amount of work that's associated with a schedule. Let's first identify what a schedule is. In a purchase agreement, in an M&A transaction, there's reference to all kinds of things that need to be part of that legal document. And it's generally referred to as schedules. And in schedules, they reference Section 1 or Section 2 or Section 3. And what's in those schedules, in those sections, may be copies of all of your quote-unquote contracts or material contracts. And, you know, there's a definition for materiality, like it might include any contract over a certain dollar volume or 100 contracts or whatever. Likewise, there may be copies of all your employment agreements, your office lease, copies of your most recent financials, copies, and there's lots and lots and lots of things like this. And it is some work to assemble them. And generally, you as a business owner and leader will be the responsible party for assembling them on your, with your team as you see fit or on your own and alongside your lawyer. And oftentimes we've seen deals get delayed because it was underestimated as to the amount of time taken to put those schedules together. And the reason that is because usually the buyer will request that schedule list after they've negotiated all the material deal points in the agreement, because the schedules are impacted by what's in the agreement. And so it's hard to get ahead of that, other than the things that you know will obviously be there, like contracts, things that may have been duplicated in due diligence. Many of the due diligence items have to be attached to the agreement in order to, in the schedule section, in order to close. And so oftentimes we get asked the question, well, can't we just reference the due diligence deal room? Well, not really, right? We need to be able to actually produce digital copies that can get put in either a digital location that everyone agrees to, or physically attach them to an electronic document as part of the legal document, right? As part of the what we'll call the four corners of the document, it needs to be attached. So just know that as you're getting into the final weeks before close, that there'll be a huge task on your list to develop and confirm that they're accurate and that you bring together the schedules. I think another important point about schedules is that because you're going to warrant, you're going to represent and warrant that those schedules are complete and accurate. Otherwise, you expose yourself to potential litigation later. There's diligence that needs to be done by your lawyer and you to make sure that they are actually complete and accurate. Meaning, if you say that these are all of the material contracts, they really have to be all the material contracts. You can't leave one out, right? Likewise, that these are all the employment agreements, they have to be all of the employment agreements. So it takes some time and diligence to be able to create those schedules. And I certainly would bring that to your attention and make sure that you're allocating time ahead of close and not, you know, planning a 2-week vacation prior to close or, you know, being in the middle of something that's going to mean that you're not available to focus on those types of things. Any other thoughts, Matt, on that?
Oh, no, I think that was, you know, very thorough. I think that it goes back to the aspect of as early as possible planning, surfacing the information, surfacing the you know, what the expectation is from the buyer. And, you know, so that it doesn't become a roadblock at the late stage. And then the final thing, you know, I think is important to think about is communication in the context of when to appropriately provide communication, planning around announcements externally, press releases, et cetera, and then also planning for a little celebration. you know, when the buyers and sellers are ultimately able to consummate the deal and put ink on the paper to kick things off appropriately, you know, it's important to communicate collectively, but then also to celebrate together and start the process of integrating and making sure that, you know, 1 + 1 can equal 4, 5, or 6.
Yeah, for sure, Matt. I think with that, we'll tie a ribbon on it. It's been great being with this week talking about sort of the timelines for, you know, a SolSide project and some of the major milestones. We wish everybody a great week. Thanks, and make it a great week.